Good morning. It is Sunday, December 2nd, 2012. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callum.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Support for KUAF comes from the University of Arkansas Bookstore, and it's Holiday Appreciation Day for U of A faculty and staff. It's Tuesday, December 4th. Razorback apparel, gifts, and more will be offered. Store locations include the Garland Avenue Bookstore, the U of A Student Union, the Northwest Arkansas Mall, and Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers. uofastore.com for more information.
Ahead on Weekend Ozarks, it's December, so we have a few ways to celebrate Christmas, from a pageant to picking your very own tree.
But first, ground will be broken early this new year on a much-anticipated Northwest Arkansas highway project. It's known as the Fayetteville Flyover. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us there in her truck.
I'm heading north on College Avenue, and I'm wanting to catch I-540. And if you've ever tried to do that, you know what a hassle it is. Because you have to turn onto Joyce, or pretend you're turning onto Joyce Boulevard in the mall area, and wait in line in the left-hand turning lane. Sometimes you have to go through several stoplight changes, and then take a quick U-ey, boot it, and get into the right-hand lane, and merge onto Fulbright Expressway to catch I-540.
The alternative, if you're driving from Midtown Fayetteville, is to head west to link up with I-540 off of North Street, or head north up Gregor Garland. All options are heavily trafficked, but the good news is that very soon you will be able to fly over all this mess. Chris Brown is Fayetteville City Engineer.
What you will be doing in order to use the flyover as you're coming down College Avenue, just after you pass the Millsap intersection, you'll be able to enter a ramp, and it'll come off the left side of the road, so it'll kind of be a left exit. Fly up and over the southbound 71B traffic and all of the Fulbright Expressway traffic, and then you'll then be able to enter onto the Fulbright Expressway westbound.
And there's more good news. The flyover will also provide an exit onto the Steel Street Crossing SMN Business Park north of the Medical District and just south of the Northwest Arkansas Mall.
Just south of the Olive Garden. Obviously, there has been a lot of development occurring around the Fulbright Expressway. Over the years, there have been some very large commercial developments. The Medical Park, as you said, and of course, Washington Regional came in, and that has generated additional development around that. So the big box stores that have came in out there, they draw traffic, which also draws additional development. So we certainly have seen that area grow as an economic driver for the city. It's a large tax base for us. The problem with the Fulbright Expressway is it's a controlled access facility, so there aren't many access points, and that's really been the weakness of that area. It's just getting into that shopping area and into the mall area has been a little bit difficult because of the controlled access facility.
As population grows in Northwest Arkansas, so does traffic, which Chris Brown says is expected to double by 2025.
And so we do continue to see traffic grow. Now, one thing about the traffic is the Joyce Boulevard intersection and College Avenue intersection is pretty much maxed out. It just can't really handle any more traffic. So to see any growth there, it's really not possible just because you can't push any more traffic through that intersection than we have now. And the flyover actually will help that intersection probably more than anything else. Of course, the flyover will parallel College Avenue, Highway 71B, and it'll be as much as 10 feet higher than College Avenue as it turns and goes turns into the bridge and goes to the west. We will have to be probably 18 feet or so over the top of all the roadways that we cross. So we're 18 to 20 feet in the air in many cases.
Project's part of the Spring 2007 Fayetteville Expressway Economic Development Corridor, designed to improve accessibility to districts adjacent to the Fulbright Expressway, Interstate 540, and College Avenue from Millsap Street to Zion Road. This $7 million flyover project is being funded by both the Fed and the state.
So the construction funding and the funding for the entire project is paid for by the federal aid funding that we received, and that was actually received back in 2005 in the transportation bill in 2005. it was an earmark, so it was allocated to this specific project. And then it's an 80-20 match, so it's 80% federal aid funding, and then the 20% that the city has to provide comes from our transportation bond fund, which again was approved in 2006. The total cost and the total cost of the flyover is about $7.7 million. So it's about $5.2 million of federal funding and then the remainder of city transportation bond funds.
One-minute domain declarations were necessary for securing property to build the flyover, with property easements adjacent to existing public highways, plus the design and engineering phase is complete. On Tuesday, November 20th, the Fayetteville City Council approved a $6.3 million construction contract with Emery Sapp & Sons of Columbia, Missouri.
Once all the approvals are in, the paperwork is done, we'll be ready to go to construction. So early 2013 is when we expect construction to begin.
And Chris Brown warns that drivers will need to be patient during the construction phase.
And we will have lane closures on Highway 71B North as we're building the ramp. We also will have to close lanes on the Fulbright Expressway to make the tie-in to the expressway. The bridge, of course, will be constructed over the top of roadways that have traffic on them. So we will have to completely close those roadways as we're setting the steel for the bridge. That will be done during the overnight hours, and they'll be allowed to close only for a short period of time, maybe 30 minutes at a time, to set each piece of steel, and then traffic will continue to flow. So there will be traffic disruptions. It will mostly be lane closures, and obviously there will be traffic backups, and there will be some pain that people experience related to that. But in the end, it will be worth it, we believe.
And what about alternative routes to avoid construction delays?
We will work with the contractor on that, and we'll put out press releases and send out information at certain times. There are certain critical times that we would ask the public to find alternate routes, but generally they'll be able to work through with the existing traffic.
And one more thing, easing eastbound Fulbright traffic into the regional hospital district is a brand new $2.6 million roundabout.
Well, the roundabout, I mean, basically a roundabout is a circular intersection. So as you enter the intersection, you will see a circle. You will enter, always make a turn to the right and go around in a counterclockwise direction, and then you'll exit off to whatever leg of the street that you're going to. Roundabouts have been proven to be much safer and also much more efficient than other types of intersections. So the four-way stop that's there that the roundabout is replacing, we do see some traffic backups, especially when you have multi-lane four-way stops like that one is. People really, there are just too many cars to try to keep track of, and the roundabout really will reduce the number of things that drivers have to look at and make decisions about. So it allows traffic to move much more smoothly. You don't have to stop at a roundabout as you come to it. You do have to yield to traffic that's in the roundabout. But we've run the traffic models, and all the models that show will make that a much more efficient intersection.
Plus, roundabouts save drivers money because they burn less fuel from engine idling and tend to be more attractive with landscaped islands to circle about. The Fayetteville flyover is an 18-month construction contract, so will be completed by mid-2014. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
In a growing area such as Northwest Arkansas, schools are bound to make news. This past week was full of education stories involving money in one form or another. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis takes a look back at a few of those stories.
In the latter half of this past week, some area high school students held events to raise money for people less fortunate than themselves. Thursday evening, students at Fayetteville High School began their annual homeless vigil. Alan Wilburn, communications director for the Fayetteville School District, says that the annual event helps raise food and money for families in the school district that most need assistance through the school's Families in Transition program.
The federal definition of homeless is an unstable living situation, not necessarily that you don't have a structure in which to live. For example, 12 people in a two-bedroom apartment, that's considered an unstable situation. We've already served it's approaching 275 students this year through that program. Sometimes it's food, sometimes it's clothing, sometimes it's helping them get a new housing arrangement. arrangement someplace, just trying to remove all the hurdles that are hindering that child from learning in the classroom.
But the district also has other programs in place to help serve families in the district who are in need.
We have a lot of different community groups that come through and help. The school district operates a program called the Outback, and it's out there at West Campus, and that's basically a store with clothing, with non-perishable food items, but they also have milk, they have diapers, all those kind of things to help out families that are really need those basic things but just can't afford to go to the store.
Wilburn says that offerings such as the Families in Transition and Outback programs help to raise awareness of the area's homeless population.
With all of the tremendous growth in Northwest Arkansas over the last 20 to 30 years, people in other parts of the state think that everyone in Northwest Arkansas drives a BMW or Mercedes and all the streets are paved with titanium, but that's just not the case. We have a number of students that their families are in trouble, and that number grows each year. And yes, we've gotten much better at identifying those students now, and they're not as hesitant to come out. They don't stay in the shadows like they used to.
As for this year's homeless vigil, students aim to raise $10,000 for the Families in Transition program. As of midday Friday, they had raised around $6,000. And students at another Fayetteville school held an event this week to give back to the community as well. The National Honor Society at Haas Hall Academy held a parking lot sale yesterday. Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellum spoke with Haas Hall seniors Yana Kill and Justin Ramey on Wednesday. Ramey says that the students' inspiration to do something came from a summer reading assignment, David Shipler's The Working Poor.
One of the problems he mentioned in the book was that we all know about the problem and it's mentioned in society every day, but no one takes action. And I think that was a big flag to us. We were like, well, we're sitting here talking about it, doing exactly what he says everyone does, but why don't we step out and be the first people to actually take action.
To decide how to take action, senior Yana Kill says that the students started a group discussion.
And we talked about the activities that we can do. And we discussed a lot of things like the actual action that we could take and how is it going to like go through, like how far do we need to like have the basics set so that we can go through with this. And we decided that it is easier for us to start with school first, to reach out to the school first and then go bigger, since it is very first step that we're taking.
Proceeds from the sale at the school's parking lot went toward the creation of an organization called Working for the Poor. The organization is designed to benefit efforts to ease poverty in the area. But not all of the education stories this week involved students raising money for worthy causes. In fact, some of the news involved districts receiving money for their own uses. The Springdale School District received word on Monday that the U.S. Department of Education had chosen Springdale as one of 61 finalists in the $400 million Race to the Top grant program. If awarded the grant, Springdale stands to receive between $20 and $30 million based on the district's population. In October, I spoke with Marcia Jones, the school district's Associate Superintendent for Curriculum, Instruction, Accountability, and Education Innovation. She says that a majority of the money would go toward expanding technology in the district.
As you know, that technology is very, very expensive. We have very limited funding streams for that. So when we can have resources go towards technology, it will have long shelf life, and it'll also benefit the district and take us to the next level of efficiency and transparency.
The grant money would also go toward expanding already existing family literacy, after-school and academy programs, supporting curriculum writing work, and implementing more of a personalized learning plan for students. Jones says that if the district receives the money, it will be required to put accountability measures in place to make sure the money is being used efficiently. But she says that most of those accountability measures already exist in the district.
We want to see increases in our student achievement, and we're using the system that's already in place from the state to track that. We're looking at defining whether or not a student's on track to be college career ready, but that'll be a part of the CAP revision, so that we'll know how many credits a student has starting at ninth grade in a more systematic way. We track those things now, but what we want to do is make it more efficient and have it more transparent, and we can do that with some of the technology resources.
The Race to the Top grants are competitive. According to a Department of Education news release, the finalists were chosen from a pool of 372 applicants, and between 15 and 25 winning applications will be announced by the end of this year. And finally, on Thursday, two public school districts found out that they could keep nearly $2.2 million in millage tax revenue, even though the amount exceeds the mandated state school funding formula. The issue originally came to light last year when the Arkansas Department of Education ordered the Eureka Springs School District and three others to return the overage, which was discovered during the previous year. Most of Arkansas's school districts take in less than the state mandated $6,023 per student from the minimum 25 mil uniform tax rate. But the Fountain Lake District in Garland County took in excess of nearly $1.4 million and Eureka Springs almost $825,000 over a four-year period. While two of the districts agreed to return the money, Eureka Springs and Fountain Lake filed a joint suit in May of last year against the Arkansas Department of Education and State Treasurer seeking injunctive relief. A Pulaski County Circuit Court ruled 4 months later in the district's favor, and Thursday the Arkansas Supreme Court upheld that decision 4-3. Former Eureka Springs Superintendent Wayne Carr says that he thought the courts made the right decision. The districts had received most of the funding already, so had the court ruled against them, they would have had to allocate and return that money.
The tax money was electronically sent to the state, and required by law that the state electronically send it back to the county collector, and then the county collector wrote a check to the school district. So the state never could not hang on to that money, and that was our court case. They had no way of intercepting that money. So what money they did hold was some categorical funds, which is probably around $200,000. So they kept that, and now they'll have to turn that back over to the school district.
In his dissenting opinion, Arkansas Chief Justice Jim Hanna wrote that, quote, "The state's carefully crafted constitutional system of state-funded public education is obliterated by the majority's decision," end quote. Legislation to amend the Arkansas Code to allow districts to keep excess millage revenue failed to pass out of committee during the last legislative budget session. The Arkansas General Assembly is expected to take up the matter in the upcoming 2013 session. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
It's the first Sunday of December, and many of you already have one or are thinking about getting your Christmas tree. If you celebrate and decorate, where will your tree come from? A box with a pre-lit fake one? From your local nursery? Or perhaps a Christmas tree farm? Earlier this week, I visited Lawless Christmas Tree Farm near Rudy. I thought I might get lost, but luckily there are signs along the way. They don't say much. Simply a green tree with a few colored balls and an arrow that guided my sleigh. When I arrived, promptly at 10 a.m., opening time, I was greeted by Buddy Lawless, a retired butcher, who, after 35 years wielding a knife, decided to open this farm in 1995. He told me why a real tree is better than a fake one.
Novelty of it, I guess, a lot of it. The pine trees older in the house, a lot of it. It's just the idea of getting to come out here and go down through the field and pick out a tree out of that 9,000 and we cut it and they take it home it's just a completely different.
Buddy's son Wade is here to help this season. He says it's the smell of a real tree that really does it for most people.
It smells like Christmas when you take a live tree into your house, and more people will mention the smell than anything else. This year I noticed a new product in the store that was looked like an icicle, and you hang it on your tree, but it had that scent just to give the illusion of that live tree, the smell of the live tree.
Wade was already out of the house when his parents started the farm. They are aging a bit, and he has recently returned to the area to help out. See, running a tree farm is serious business. You don't just plant a seed and wait around until December to open up shop. It's a year-round, full-time job.
We get little trees in February and plant them. And then the next February, we do the same thing again, just over and over. The little trees that are a year old, with the exception of the last 2 years, need staked. I'll put a little fishing cane down beside them and tape it to the cane so it'll grow straight.
Depending on the year, they could plant up to 4,000 trees. The size of the farm has fluctuated over the years. Around 10,000 trees are currently growing in 98 rows on 18 acres. The young ones are barely a foot tall and won't be ready to take home for a few years.
Of course, we do have a few big trees. It's when we started planting them 27 years ago, I think we still got a few of them, just and they're 20, 25 foot tall now. But the average is from The average is from 3 to 8 foot, 9 foot, somewhere along in there.
April brings spring weather, and it also brings bugs. In particular,
a tip moth. It's a little, kind of kind of butterfly type, and they'll lay an egg in the end of a new shoot, and that a little worm will go down in that shoot and kill it plumb back to what grew the year before, or the hardwood we called it.
If you don't get the moths out, you wind up with a dead spot on a tree. Nobody wants a Christmas tree with a brown spot, so Buddy sprays. Luckily, he can use a tractor with booms attached vertically that spray the trees as he drives up and down the rows. Another important job is trimming the trees. If left to their own devices, the Virginia pines would grow every which way, unevenly, not making for the picture-perfect Christmas tree.
They had to be trimmed. We've got a motor on a backpack. With a boom comes over your head, you got an 8 foot a sickle, like a mowing machine sickle, hanging right here in front of you. And if you can walk a circle, you can trim the first 8 feet. Then we got one that starts at 8 feet and goes up six more. And on the larger trees, but the more you trim them, the prettier tree you got. The more you work with them, you have to trim the tops and the bottoms.
So how often are you trimming?
Well, from about the middle of August till a week or so ago. it's a full-time job.
So you're out here you're out here all year.
Yep, you're right. From February on. And
you get to take January off.
No, because you're getting your equipment cleaned up and getting it and taken care of. Of course, with the sprayer, it's water. You got to get it in pretty early to keep it from freezing.
All year includes some of the hottest months. This year and the one before brought record-breaking temperatures, coupled with extended periods of time with no rain, caused extreme drought conditions. Buddy says the dry weather has been really tough on them.
You see out through there where those skips, there was a little tree in those skips when we got through planting this year, but they're gone. And year before last was our worst year for the drought, and it even got some 6 and 8 and 10 footers to kill them.
How do you water?
Don't. Mother Nature has to take care of that over that 18 acres. And it's kind of up to the weather whether I grow a tree or whether I don't. But the last 2 years have been the roughest ones. And
So what kind, how many trees have you lost in the last couple of years?
Too many. Somewhere in the neighborhood, 5,500.
As Buddy has said before, there are still over 9,000 Virginia pines for patrons to choose from. When customers arrive at the farm, they are given a long white PVC pipe. One end is painted with Hunter's orange. After walking up and down the rows, studying the green of each tree, the height, the fullness of the needles. Once you've chosen your perfect Christmas tree, if you want it cut that day, you hold the orange end up. On busy days, especially on the weekends, Buddy sits in sort of a deer stand or treehouse. It's about 15 feet above the ground. He's watching for those orange ends. When he sees one, he calls down to his son Wade, or one of the many boys who works for him seasonally. They'll hop on a four-wheeler, chainsaw that tree down, and trailer it back to the covered area that serves as the shop. The day I visited was slow, but a woman did pull up in her SUV. She said she was in a hurry, but with so many trees to choose from, she was forced to take her time. Once the tree is back at the shop, the guys put it in a shaker.
To take all the dead needles and bird nest and dust and junk out of it so it ends up here on this floor instead of your living room floor.
Got a handful right down there.
Buddy. Right at the stump. Sorry. Right all the way down to the basement.
Next to the last limb.
Once Wade and his partner have gotten rid of those loose needles, they carry the 9-foot tree back to a long table. Attached to the middle of that table is a funnel of sorts. On the outside is a mesh used for baling the trees, making them smaller and easier to transport. The table is also how they price the tree. Once it is through the funnel and tightly bound, it's lined up to hash marks written on the wood. Prices start at $15 for anything under 3 feet, and kids do like that smaller size for their bedrooms. After that, it's $5 a foot. So when should you buy your tree, and how do you care for it once it's home?
3 weeks is about as long as they should be kept in the house, and it's important to put them in a stand that holds water, and it's important that you use warm water, hot water, just barely holds your hand in it, in that stand. What that does, that helps melt that sap on the bottom of the trunk and let that let the water go on up in the tree, and it'll last twice as long that way.
Buddy says that on a busy weekend, he's seen upwards of 50 cars lined up out here. He welcomes customers to make a day of it, pack a picnic, sit out under the pines. These few weeks leading up to Christmas are what make this job worth it.
You got to enjoy the kids and the people that come out, because that's where the enjoyment comes. And we have some families that has been coming out for 20 years. One little girl in particular, she was in my arms when taking pictures when they first started, and now she's graduating from college.
His son Wade finally met that girl this season. I asked Buddy when he might let Wade take over the family business.
I have lots of people asking me when I'm going to quit. I said, when you find me laying out there under one of them trees.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. It's Sunday, December 2nd, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Katie Hendrickson, the host of tonight's edition and every Sunday night's edition of Sunday Symphony. Good holiday.
Yes, relaxing, chilled out, which is always a good thing.
Everyone I talked to this year had that same response.
I didn't, though.
Oh.
Yours
no, you
was
had
not
two.
Relaxing.
No.
That's right. You had two in one day.
Yes.
That's if that's funny. The worst thing
but
that
I'm
happens
glad
to
everybody
you.
Else did.
But you ate a lot of good food that way? Extra pie?
Lots of food.
So do you then extend this chilled feeling to tonight's Sunday Symphony? Do you have very mellow symphonies?
No, they're not very mellow.
Okay, good.
Let's see. Well, first off, we've got Mozart's Symphony No. 25 now. Anyone who's seen the movie Amadeus, you're going to immediately recognize the first movement because that's what the intro from the movie is. It's very recognizable. And I don't know, like, I think I'm a weird child because my parents took me to see that movie in the theater, and that movie came out when I was in elementary
school.
Well,
it's fitting. It's fitting, right?
But it's a bold, colorful movie.
It's very, and it's very dark, too.
Yes.
But yeah, I that's one of the earliest movies. I mean, I remember seeing things like Star Wars and E.T., and then I remember seeing Amadeus in the theater.
But that, to me, that's a logical progression.
It is.
Amadeus seems to fit with Star Wars and E.T.
Yeah.
It's sort of otherworldly.
It is, definitely, like for sure. Yes. But that's that symphony is like, that's what plays in the opening of that movie.
Right.
It's very dramatic. It's very Mozartian. And then we have Bruckner's Symphony Number 4, and he self-titled it the Romantic Symphony. So it's very lush and romantic. And then William Schumann, who's an American composer, actually, his Symphony Number 3, and Leonard Slatkin describes it as having rhythmic vitality, melodic lyricism, and harmonic intensity. So these are all very intense works, I would say.
Wow.
But three symphonies is going to pack a punch, and they're all, each symphony is very, I guess, pretty dramatic and bold, is what I would say. So,
okay. So, coming off of the chill Thanksgiving right. weekend that it seems like everybody else had,
it's time to get really excited about
right.
the holiday season
right,
and
right.
all the things that we're all doing this. I mean, holiday season, it seems like it's just, wow, it's here already.
Right.
Yeah. That's great. All right. Tonight at 7. And then as you progress on toward Christmas on, of note, every Monday through Friday 11, are we going to start hearing sprinklings of holiday?
Yeah, a little bit. And we also have some special holiday programming. Every Friday, starting next Friday, we've got special holiday programs that we'll be putting in. So it's time we can get really festive that way.
Excellent. Are there holiday symphonies?
Whole symphonies? You know, I'm not really sure about that.
Is that
there's a lot of, I mean, people, you know, traditionally there's a lot of masses and things like that. I mean, of
right.
course, Handel's Messiah.
That's kind
of
what
I, I mean, that wouldn't be a symphony, but there's a lot of, there are a lot of sacred works, large sacred works that
right.
would be qualified as Christmas season
right.
type music.
Okay. I mean, I know that Mozart's not, you know, he didn't write Jingle Bells, but.
But there's, I mean, there are definitely classical works that aren't necessarily Christmas, like it doesn't say Christmas
right.
anywhere,
right.
but
right.
they, people play them around the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
People think about the
right.
winter holidays when they hear them.
And maybe. You wouldn't call the Hallelujah.
No, it's actually Easter. It's also for Easter.
Right.
Handel's Messiah is for Easter. But
right, so that's to look forward to through the month. Bruckner, Mozart, Schumann tonight.
Tonight
William
at 7.
Schumann. Because everyone thinks of Schumann, the
right.
European, but
right.
this is the American composer.
Right.
All
yes.
right. Tonight at 7,
yes.
Sunday Symphonies with Katie Hendrickson. Thank you.
Thanks.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. In a moment, a story about a holiday standard at the oldest community theater venue in Northwest Arkansas, as the Art Center of the Ozarks is again presenting the best Christmas pageant ever. But there are some other theatrical productions scheduled around the region this month, many of them holiday-related. Theater Squared presents its second show of the season, Period of Adjustment, billed as Tennessee Williams' only comedy. On our Tuesday edition of Daily Ozarks at Large next week, we'll have highlights from a recent artist forum featuring cast and crew that was recorded this past week at Fayetteville Public Library. Period of Adjustment opens December 6th and runs through the 30th at Nadine Baum Studio in Fayetteville. You can learn more at theater2.org. Rogers Little Theater takes a new look at a Christmas staple with A Christmas Carol Today. It opens Friday night and runs through the 16th in downtown Rogers. More details at rogerslittletheater.org. Back by popular demand this month, The Santa Land Diaries from Mark Landon Smith and Ceramic Cow Productions. It's intended for mature audiences, comes with a cash bar, and is incredibly funny. You can find out more online at about the performances at the UARC Bowl on Dixon Street at ceramiccowproductions.org. Performance dates for Santa Land Diaries, December 13th through the 15th. And the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts will stage Beauty and the Beast at Breedlove Auditorium December 14th, 15th, and 16th. You can find out more at uafs.edu/academy. If you celebrate Christmas, you probably have some personal or family traditions, a certain meal for the Christmas dinner, a special ornament for the tree, or the communal viewing of a favorite holiday movie. For many, here the Art Center of the Ozarks annual production of the best Christmas pageant ever is a tradition. This year, the latest edition of the ACO production will be staged three times for the public between December 7th and 9th in Springdale.
Kind of a gift to the community. We have a lot of community folks in it, but it really is a very special play. So a lot of folks get to come see it, and it's always a lot of fun.
Harry Blundell is the director of theater at ACO and the production director for the 2012 Best Christmas Pageant Ever.
So when I say get in your lineup and your order off stage, you need to be in this order so that when you come on stage, you'll already be in place. That way you don't have to run up and down.
Harry has directed the play at ACO before, several times, actually. The center's archives list the play first produced there in 1989 and every single season since 1997. It puts the community in community theater. This year's cast, at least 70 strong, 62 children and 8 adults. Harry Blundell says past casts have been as big as 80. And many of the younger cast members have made the play a tradition of their own, coming back to the stage as long as their age will allow.
I've had some children who will start at 8, which is the minimum age they have to be, and I've had some cry at 15 because they have to leave, not because I tell them to, but they self-stop. When they start looking at themselves and they look at everyone else and they say, I don't look like these children anymore, then they kind of self-stop, opt out.
The Best Christmas Pageant Ever doesn't start out as that. Here's the synopsis. Panic erupts when the Herdman family invades their church's local Christmas pageant. The Herdman children are rude, they're crude, and they take an odd approach to the Christmas story. Rehearsals are destroyed, fire is started, and the pageant begins to list toward cancellation. How things get back on track is the heart of the story. Appropriately billed as a family-friendly script, this year's edition even includes a family, the Gates.
My name is Madison Gates, and I'm a Sunday school kid.
Debbie Gates, Mrs. Bradley.
Ernie Gates, Mr. Bradley.
I'm Matthew Gates, and I'm Max.
If you're not doing the math, that's about 6% of this year's cast. The Gates family involvement began when Matthew Gates earned a role in the 2008 production. He returned in 2009, then younger sister Madison joined the cast the next year, and last year, all the Gates were in. Matthew says he didn't so much as recruit his sister, mother, and father, as much as they observed the fun he was having.
Sort of. I guess after they watched the rehearsals after a while, I guess we all kind of thought it'd be kind of fun to get in and do this as a family.
Matthew had been in a few productions before his first Christmas pageant role. Madison had taken some summer workshops at ACO, but Mom and Dad?
Well, the past 2 years...
We are truly community actors.
Yes,
we'll put it that
absolutely.
Way. We have a lot of fun together.
Yes.
Hopefully our personalities will come out. You know, we've been married 28 years, and so hopefully some of that'll come out. We've had a lot of fun with even at home, so it's been fun.
Even though Harry Blundell has been directing versions of the Best Christmas Pageant Ever, he insists each year is different for him because the cast turnover creates an entirely new atmosphere. And what about those large casts, many of those new faces? Can a director truly be expected to memorize more than 5 dozen young actors in time for the opening curtain? Name tags help. But Harry Blundell says every year the production comes together as a genuine team effort.
You know, I know the story inside and out, and by the time the kids get to performance, all 62 of these children will know each other's lines. So even on the dark years that I've had to excuse a cast member for some reason, or I might have had a cast member who got ill all of a sudden and had to replace a line part, it's usually pretty easy to choose someone in the show. And overnight, they'll know exactly what's going on because they're so involved. And this is a story that kids read in the school system all the time. So lots of children are already familiar with this play before they get to the Art Center.
The auditions for the Best Christmas Pageant are held each September and are a fairly uncomplicated process. Young actors show up at the ACO, fill out a form, recite a few lines, and sing a few bars of A Christmas Carol.
And if they can do all of those things, they usually are an automatic fit for the show because most of the parts in the show are really angels and shepherds, the Sunday school kids that support the rest of the action. So that's a pretty good thing. And then usually around the end of October, 1st of November, we'll start rehearsals, and it's kind of a hit or miss for a week or so while we're trying to miss some of our other productions and trying to fit these rehearsals in. But by the time we get to mid-November, it's pretty much about 2.5 weeks of every night outside the Thanksgiving holiday, which always falls the week before we open the show.
What's more fun, being a good kid on stage or an honorary kid?
Honorary.
What's good about being honorary?
For me, it was fun because I got to do a lot of things that I'm not allowed to do off the stage. So all the stuff I wanted to do, I could do.
You can see the Ornery Herdman kids turn Christmas expectations upside down again this year at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. The story of the best Christmas pageant ever remains the same, but the cast changes. And this year, patrons for the play will be inside a newly remodeled ACO.
Because over the last over the last 6 months, we've been really working hard to do some revitalization here at the Art Center. So when people come see the show this year, they'll be walking into a relatively new space. If they remember what it was like, even in October, when we did American Girl on October the 5th, on October the 8th, we started this revi process and opened a show on the 26th of October. And people walked into a new facility, basically. So lots of fun and lots of new things for people to look at.
The best Christmas pageant ever will be presented to the public Friday and Saturday nights, December 7th and 8th, at 7:30, and Sunday afternoon, December 9th at 3. More information can be found at artscenteroftheozarks.org.
Guys, remember, you need to sign in, and we're going to go out there. I think a few of you might still need to visit with Kathy about it.
Later today on This American Life.
Piney is sort of this mysterious figure in our life.
I know that Piney has a lot of physical ailments.
I've heard he has a team of doctors.
I mean, my first impression was just like, Piney is misunderstood.
Piney is my dog, and those are the people who I work with who do not seem to understand him. Animal sacrifices later today.
That's This American Life just ahead at 10 o'clock, right here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
And before Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor, one of our Sunday montages. You went to a Christmas tree farm.
I did.
In Rudy. So I thought, at first I thought, why don't I do a montage of famous Rudys? But no. Here are some movie clips, television clips, and music associated with Christmas trees.
Well, that boy of yours deserves a real Christmas tree.
But that's a real tree, Mr. Wilson. It's
a tall, green, pine-smelling tree from God's own forest. A tree that the boy has helped to cut down himself.
Me, Mr. Wilson? Cut down a tree? A Christmas tree?
Dad, didn't they invent Christmas tree lots so people wouldn't have to drive all the way out to nowhere and waste a whole Saturday?
They invented them, Russ, because people forgot how to have a fun, old-fashioned family Christmas and are satisfied with scrawny, dead, overpriced trees that have no special...
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hung where you can see, every couple tries to stop. Rocking around.
This doesn't seem to fit the modern spirit.
I don't care. We'll decorate it and it'll be just right for our play. Besides, I think it needs me.
Christmas tree? Why?
Look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
That's right.
Attaboy, Clarence.
Decorations of red on a green Christmas tree. If you're not here with me.
And instead of a tree, didn't your father put up an aluminum pole?
Oh, Jerry, stop it.
Men, weren't there feats of strength that always ended up with you crying?
I can't take it anymore. I'm going to work. You happy now?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know what those 11 sound bites are specifically, you can go to OzarksAtLarge.com. It is Sunday, December 2nd, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Becca Martin-Brown. She is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Okay, usually we chat a little. No time. No time. We're late. We're late for a very important date.
All right.
All right.
Today, 10 to 5, there's a gem fair at the Northwest Arkansas Convention Center in Springdale. Jewelry, beads, gems, crystals, minerals, findings, $3 to get in. The Winter Dreams Home Tour is today, the Junior League Tour.
Yes.
8 homes in Benton and Washington counties. That's from 11 to 5. Tickets are $20. You can find out more at juniorleaguenwa.org.
There's a map there as well.
Yes. The Block Street Holiday Art Sale, no longer on Block Avenue, but at Mount Sequoia, wraps up from noon to 4 today at Parker Hall, first building on your left.
It's one of those things, if it remains at Mount Sequoia for like 20 years, people will wonder, you know, why it was ever called that. I love things like that.
Except in favor, where we'll know.
Right.
The Holiday Bazaar is from noon to 4, wrapping up at the Community Creative Center at the Nadine Baum Studios. The Block Avenue Open House.
Actually on Block Avenue.
Actually on Block Avenue is from noon to 4. Businesses open for Christmas. There is a holiday open house and theme tours of the Hawkins House from 12:30 to 4 today at the Rogers Historical Museum. The Friendship Club home tour out in Madison County, 3 homes, and the First Baptist Church of Hinesville is from 1 to 4 today, $10. Saw one of the houses, inspired me to actually do something creative.
Yeah.
So I'm saying. The Holiday Scholastic Book Fair is from 1 to 5 at the library across the street from us. It's the most wonderful time of the year, says the Bella Vista Men's Chorus, and they're in concert at 3 today at Bella Vista Community Church.
Mm-hmm.
And on two other notes that make me happy, there's a metal band called Like Moths to Flames.
Very Christmassy.
That are part of the Festivus for the Rest of Us event at the Showcase Theater at the Northwest Arkansas Mall.
See, so you have
there
a holiday connection there.
There you go.
Will there be feats of strength?
Oh, I hope so. They will perform today, and you can find out more at ArkansasLiveMusic.com. And Tab Benoit's in town.
This is amazing. He's at George's, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen the video he did about saving the bayou, oh, wow.
He is worth your time and your money.
He is not only a good musician, he's a really good man. Showtime is 9 o'clock tonight, and tickets are $15 at George's in
Fayetteville. That's a bargain. That's a bargain. All right. Thank you, Becca.
Full day of activities. Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Sunday. It's the 2nd of December, 2012. It's the birthday of the novelist Ann Patchett, born in Los Angeles, 1963. Grew up Catholic, went to an all-girls Catholic school in Nashville, where she still lives. Ann Patchett, who said, "Catholicism really trained me for fiction writing. I think it has to be the greatest religion for a fiction writer, because it is so much a tradition of story and parable. I spent my whole childhood on my knees in front of pieces of carved marble, and in my heart I was filling that stone with enormous life." Ann Patchett, who went to Sarah Lawrence, where one of her teachers was Grace Paley, and Patchett said, "Grace Paley taught me that writing must not be compartmentalized. You don't step out of the stream of your life to do your work. Work was the life, and who you were as a mother, teacher, friend, citizen, activist, and artist was all the same person." Ann Patchett, author of Bel Canto, Truth and Beauty, and most recently, State of Wonder. It's the birthday of George Saunders, born in Amarillo, Texas, 1958. In high school, he discovered Robert Persig's Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance and books by Ayn Rand. Particularly influenced by Ayn Rand, he started thinking of himself as a character from an Ayn Rand novel. Went to the Colorado School of Mines to study engineering, then to Syracuse to study creative writing. His books include Civil War Land in Bad Decline, The Very Persistent Gappers of Fripp, and a collection of stories entitled 10th of December will be published next year. George Saunders, who said, "Humor is what happens when we're told the truth quicker and more directly than we're used to." And it's the birthday of the novelist T.C. Boyle, born Tom Corahessen Boyle in Peekskill, New York, 1948. Went to the University of Iowa Writers' Workshop. His most recent book, entitled San Miguel, the story of three generations of couples living and raising sheep on one of the Channel Islands off the coast of California, based on diaries of real families who lived there. Boyle said he wrote the book because he wanted the challenge of writing something that was non-comic and non-ironic. Here's a poem for today by Romulus Linney, a poem entitled Wild Before Winter. In my meadow luxuriates the green world, preening itself before the yearly catastrophe of frost and freezing. One green burst of curls flung forward like a boy's head of hair brushed over his face in football. Now I, in my 80th year, stripped of my defenses, flying, drunken winds blow at my back, crashing gleefully, turn the green world dark too soon. Now wild before winter, in my age, deserted by my sins, cold words spoken to my children, returning hot now to blister my heart. No more the nights with love, betrayal, obsession, devastation, abandonment. Old man, wild before winter, still childish, my little river running past, as if nothing will happen, as if ice will not encase it. A poem by Romulus Linney, Wild Before Winter, used by permission of the estate of Romulus Linney here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, the oldest monthly devoted to verse in the English-speaking world. You can join its centennial celebration and become a subscriber at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Joy Biles, engineered by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Springdale, and Rudy. Keeping it with Rudy.
So you've been to Rudy now.
I have.
Not a lot of people in Northwest Arkansas have, but I have been to Rudy. And
I've always noticed the sign as
sure,
I drive down
540.
But it's actually a couple of miles to get to Rudy. So
it's pretty country.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It really is.
All right. We've had this whole kind of show about holiday stuff going on.
Yeah.
And I guess it's fitting. It's the first Sunday of December. But
Right. Last
Thursday, you went to something at the Walton Arts Center.
I did. I went to the Christmas Truce. It was Cantus and Theater La Ti Da. And it was about the Christmas Truce that took place the first Christmas of World War I. German and English and some French and some Scottish and Irish troops. At the stroke, not the stroke of midnight, but close after midnight, when it turned into Christmas 1914, troops started coming out and singing and meeting each other. And then a soccer game takes place. And it was a warm event. But then when you realize, and they do this in the production, they have to be responsible artistically, that in Christmas 1915, 16, and 17, these same people were shooting and killing each other and mustard gas.
Right.
It was a mix of optimistic and pessimistic. It was a wonderful show, though. Cantus, based out of Minneapolis.
Acapella.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It was a marvelous experience. If it ever comes back, it was a good sight. Not quite a sellout, but close to Walton Arts Center. And it was a fantastic event.
I wish it was just one night. I wish they had continued into the weekend.
Yeah. It was a 10 by 10.
Yeah.
And, a lot of young people there. But it was beautiful. It was gorgeous.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Happy Sunday.